I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live a lot of date. We don't care. Yes, indeed. We don't care if we're a little bit late. We're right on time today. It is 4:02, according to the studio clock. And yes, you're listening to Out There. I'm Ruthie, and today is Friday, July 12th. Thanks, Mark Beauvais, for getting me set up in the studio, and I come running in here at 3:59. Actually, it was 4:01. But my clips are all ready to go for today's show. I have an interview with Dylan. Well, for today's show, I have interviews with some easy pickings, people that were staying at my house this week. One is Dylan, talking about setting up his van to live out of. Dylan's a recent Amherst College graduate and also works at Book and Plow Farm, which is Amherst College's farm. And also an interview with Dora Staub. Dora Staub is staying with us this week, and Dora is from Springfield. I've actually had Dora's dad and one of her younger brothers on Out There before, probably talking about growing up car-free in Springfield or something. But Dora's just coming from 3 months on the Appalachian Trail, so she talks a bit about her Appalachian Trail experience. And do I have any stories of the day? I guess my only... Okay, so Help Yourself is a... I don't know, organization might be a stretch. It's a registered as a nonprofit, I believe. But Help Yourself is a group of friends, spearheaded by Felix Lufkin some years ago. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or something. But Help Yourself has planted and maintained as best they can edible plants in downtown Northampton and other cities, towns in the area, I think, like Greenfield, Chicopee, Holyoke. I'm not sure where all. But in Northampton, what's ripe right now are the plums. I love plums. There's a yellow plum tree that's been planted some years ago along the rail trail, right the stretch that's on the railroad tracks. It's right behind A to Z, which is off of King Street, between King Street and the railroad tracks, just north of Main Street, the Main Street Bridge. There's a plum tree, some peach trees, Asian pear, European pear, apple trees. Some of them have a blight or something going on, but the peaches are looking really good. They're not ripe yet. The plums, on the other hand, are trying to ripen faster than they can rot. So when I go by, I've been trying to clear out some of the undergrowth and pull off the rotten ones. And so today I had my bike and trailer like parked next to leaning against the signpost right next to the plum tree. And I was in the middle of the plum tree picking and eating plums. And it was just interesting to watch people walk by and see how much we're all in our little worlds. I was in my little plum world. And you know, people are talking on their phones or have their headphones on and they walk by. And I'm thinking, there's plums. There's ripe plums. They're so good. There's free plums, everybody. Literally, like the tree is literally like 1 foot from the path, the branches. And I guess people don't get as excited about plums as I do. And it made me think about the excitement of traveling. Like when you go to a new place, your powers of observation are functioning. They're functioning high. But when you're in the same place that you live and that you see all the time and, yeah, I don't know, you get in these habits of thinking there's nothing new to see, or I'm just like on a mission. That's how I usually am. I'm usually often on too much of a mission. But when you're traveling and you just really observe, your survival depends on your observing your surroundings. Then I feel like it's sort of this heightened awareness. Oh, the Buddhists, that's what the Buddhists say. Well, I'm done preaching. Okay, here's Dylan. It's Sunday, July 7th, 2024. I'm in the backyard here at the Flow Op at 6 and 8 High Street with Dylan. Dylan, what's brought you to the Flow Up? Oh, wait, no, can you introduce yourself?
Oh, yes. Hi, I'm Dylan. He, they pronouns.
What's brought you to the Flow Up?
What's brought me to the Flow Up?
This last few days.
Yeah. I've been working on a little camper van that I've been living in for the past month now. Doing things like installing like a subfloor, framing, insulation. Really just trying to get a good foundation going so that I can start building some like furniture and walling and stuff in the coming weeks.
And are you planning on living in that for a while?
For a while, yeah. I got a year-long position in the valley here. And then after that's done, I'm thinking of taking the camper van on the road for, you know, 6 months, a year or so. Honestly, maybe until it breaks down.
Uh-huh.
And then, so a good chunk of time I'm thinking of devoting to this thing.
How long have you lived in the camper van so far? Well, it was just a van before, right?
Well, not
yeah.
A
camper van.
Yeah, the cargo van I've been living in for a month now. Uh-huh. And it's been cool, man. I thought it was going to be a lot more, like, I don't know, nerve-wracking or, like, anxiety-inducing than it's proven to be so far.
Uh-huh.
Especially, like, you know, during the heat wave, people were saying, how the hell are you sleeping in that thing? And I answered, there's no insulation in it right now, so I was sleeping in beautiful 60, 70-degree nights. It was wonderful.
Do you have ventilation windows, screens, or something like that? Fan?
No, I have a little like battery operated fan that I shove in there, but most of the time I'm not actually spending any time in the van. It's just I'm just like kind of out in the world. I really only use it to sleep.
What things did you think would be stressful or what were you anxious about when you decided to start living out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the obvious thing is I'd never really lived anywhere apart from a room in a house or some other permanent structure before. So definitely just kind of, you know, a small amount of space. I don't have like a bathroom of my own, a kitchen of my own. So kind of meeting my basic needs kind of takes a lot more work, both like mental work to think about these things and just physical work to go from here and there and get all the things I need. But I thought that was going to be like a huge stressor on my life, and occasionally it is. I mean, that's life, I suppose, but it's really proved out to be like a pretty wonderful experience so far.
Do you remember the first night that you stayed in it?
I do, and I was like, what the hell am I doing here? And then those feelings subsided after a bit. But the first night was a little rough.
So did you know where you were going to park it the first night, or like what happened?
Yeah, I was parking it at like a friend's house, which, you know, I felt pretty good there. But in terms of like safety and all that, I felt fine. It was just like it was the first time anxiety of it all, you know.
Why have you decided to do this?
Well, I was really into the idea of homesteading in like late high school. Originally I had the idea of sort of doing like an off-grid lifestyle, and then I got to college and realized like I'm not as much of a hermit as I originally thought I was. And I definitely want to socialize and go travel and see people and places more. And so the homestead became a homestead on wheels in a sort of way. And also I just like, I don't know. I think I really need some time, like, kind of shaking up my upbringing in a certain way. Like, I spent most of my life living in sort of suburbia in New Jersey, and it was fine for what it was, but I, you know, since coming to college, I've kind of changed a whole lot, and I need some sort of, I don't know, again, to just, like, shake things up and sort of get a grasp of, like, what my values are, what is important for me in my life, what I can get rid of, and kind of doing this sort of, like, if you want to call it, like, minimalist lifestyle, and just, like, really kind of focusing on my body, my health, my basic needs, and kind of starting from that foundation as opposed to sort of the foundation of suburbia that is kind of, you know, embedded in me.
I guess you don't have any lawn to mow, do you?
No, no, goodness, no. That's the best part of it, honestly.
You were also saying that because your shelter is just mostly just somewhere that you sleep at night, that then during the day you use, like, shared community resources. Oh, yeah. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I had a really good day, I think like a week ago, where I was having some work done on the van. And while I was doing that, I was just roaming around Northampton, going to, like, the Smith College Art Museum and just, like, walking around the streets and exploring. And I'm, like, again, this kind of goes back to my upbringing in suburbia. Like, my default is usually just, like, laying in bed and, like, scrolling on my phone or being on a computer. And I kind of don't like that. and you know, having the opportunity to just, like, because if I was, like, living in a room and had a pretty, like, you know, cozy, comfortable, like, convenient living situation, I feel like I would spend a lot more time just, like, sitting in bed. Mm-hmm. At least, like, having a van that I need to get out of every day incentivizes me to just, like, get out in the world and kind of, again, like, shake things up about my behavior.
You're kind of tall. You can't even stand up in the thing.
No,
right?
Goodness, no. I don't. Nobody can stand up in that thing. It's like 4 feet tall. But that hasn't stopped me yet.
Yeah. So it also means that you like, go to the library, mm-hmm. things like that, which it's great to support those things.
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't have never gone to, gosh, what is that? The library that's kind of near Smith College. The
Forbes?
Yeah, yeah. I would have never gone there. And, you know, living in a van has made me go places I never thought I would have gone. And I think I'm all the more better for it.
How's it working for you economically? Like, how much did the van cost, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah,
and what kind of, like, resources are you putting into it to make it a livable place? And does it run well? Or is it going to keep on running well?
Undetermined. So I paid $33.50 for the van, which, according to, like, Kelly Blue Book, was a steal.
Like, $33.50. Like...
Yeah.
Where's the zeros?
Oh, the $3,350.
Okay.
There you go. Not.
I don't know, because, I mean, I think people pay.
Sometimes.
People pay $70,000 for a car right here.
Yeah. And yeah, there's the big problem is there's a whole bunch of rust, and that's sort of.
Oh, that's your ventilation.
Yeah. Yeah. Ideally not, but currently that's what we're working with. But yeah, so I paid $33.50 for the van. I've done probably, like, I don't know, like $1,500 worth of work on it. And then now that I'm building it out, it's, like, I think on construction materials that I've used this weekend, I'm somewhere around like $300. You know, I've had some money saved up specifically for this project, and also not having to pay rent really helps.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of sat down and realized that, like, yes, this is a lot of money that I've spent on it, but if you compare it to, you know, say like a more traditional lifestyle, right? Paying rent, you'd have to buy some form of car, and especially in this area, and especially in my, well, you know, where I work. Like, I think if you take all of that into consideration, over the long run, I'm fairly certain I'm saving money. And even if I'm sort of like, you know, a little like, it's sort of a wash as to whether I'm saving money, I'm still having a great time doing it. So, you know, I'm young, I'm carefree, I'm healthy. This is the time to do it. And then, you know, later in life, I have all, hopefully, all these fun stories that I can share. What I don't want to do is go straight into traditional living and then, you know, kind of ruminate over how I didn't, you know, dare to do, you know, fun and exciting things while I had the chance. And all of a sudden I'm locked into, you know, a job that I can't get out of and a living situation that I have to be in.
You said you had a year-long position. Oh, hello, listeners. We're going to interrupt this clip. And before we go to Dylan talking about Book and Plow Farm and have a song, Dylan's Request, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. And the interview is with Dylan. I don't know Dylan's last name, but Dylan was staying at our place while they worked on their fixing up their camper van. And this is Flesh Canoe. Dylan said Flesh Canoe. I thought he said Flush Canoe, but fortunately, the internet knows how to correct your mistakes. And so Flesh Canoe came up by Animal Collective.
Thank you.
Oh, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was Dylan's request. Kids These Days. Actually, that song was from 2005. And Flesh Canoe by Animal Collective. That was a song? Sorry, I should just be quiet. So I have more interview from Dylan right here. I'm just going to catch the last couple of seconds of the last clip.
All right. Situation that I have to be in. Mm-hmm.
You said you had a year-long position in the area. What are you doing for work?
I'm working at the Book and Plow Farm at Amherst College.
What's your position there?
I'm what's called the Green Dean, which in terms of job titles is pretty, one of the best you can get. but yeah, so I'm there's sort of two parts of my job. One of them is just the basic rigmarole of farming, vegetable farming, that is. And then the other half of it is sort of the more programmatic elements of the Book and Plow. Things like hosting events for the college and sort of the surrounding community. Hosting classes that want to come up to the farm. Things like that. You know, being a sort of like forward-facing person for the for the farm. To the college.
How long have you been working at Book and Plow?
So I've had this position now for a month, and I have been working on and off as like a student intern since fall of 2020.
So that's like 4 years. So you have worked yourself way up to be the dean. It's the Green Dean, it seems like.
Yeah, I'd hope.
Can you talk a little bit about Book and Plow, like what it does, what its focus is?
Yeah, so it's primarily like a farm that focuses on the student experience. It used to be more of like a production farm back when its original owners. Like, so the farm started in 2013. Amherst College leased some land off to these farmers, Pete and Tobin. And originally it was just sort of like its own independent business that was on college land and that hired students on occasion, but was mainly like a sort of real like heavy production farm. And then eventually the college bought the farm and kind of transformed it into more of a student-facing experience, like a learning farm, right? So most of the labor is from students just working jobs during the semester, during the summer. Really like focusing on teaching students how to farm, teaching students about, you know, all things around organic agriculture. And yeah, it's not so much like a go, 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 like hustle, hustle, hustle production farm. It's really like, you know, taking the time to make sure that people's, you know, people are healthy, people's bodies are healthy, people are like getting some form of learning experience out of it.
It's probably nice to have free labor on a farm.
Oh, it's not free.
Oh, it's not.
No, we pay them.
Oh, okay. How much do you pay?
It's, I think for students, it's hovers around $16. I think it changes a little bit every year.
Where does the money come from?
It comes from the college. The Book and Plow is a subsidiary of Dining Services at the college, which leads to some interesting things where the like Dining Services gives the farm a budget and then the farm sells food back to Dining Services, which I think it's more of like a, you know, just like a show than anything like real. But it's the college, it's a sort of wage position. So it's also a real cool thing because, nobody who works at the farm is, their wages are not dependent on their ability to produce, you know, enough food to live a comfortable life. So it gives the Book and Plow really, unique opportunities to experiment with, you know, like no-till or any kind of other like agriculture experiments that are in the area. Like there's a huge like clover experiment that the Book and Plows tapped into a little bit.
Like doing what?
I think it's, I'm not sure about the specifics, but it's really like clover as a cover crop and then planting directly into the clover. And from what I know, there's a couple of farms in the area who are engaged in this. I think it's spearheaded by this guy named Lincoln. I wish I knew more specifics about him. But he's like gone to a bunch of farms and asked them to participate in this experiment and just trying to collect data on, you know, different organic agriculture methods.
You were saying that when you were a student there, your econ class went there?
Yeah, so there was an econ class where we were, the point was to demonstrate like diminishing returns on labor. So there was, we were cutting garlic, and there was a team of like two people, and then there was a team of like 10 people, and everything in between. And then we graphed out like how many heads of garlic people were able to cut. And then at a certain point, like 7, 8, 9, it started to drop off because people were like fighting to get enough garlic. Yeah, and that's one of the really like fun things that the Book and Plow provides an opportunity for is classes that in some way the like farming is relevant to them, or even just like I was in an English class, I was telling you last semester that we just went up to the farm because it's a nice space on campus and just did a little free writing. So yeah, it's great. I think last semester, like somewhere around like 9 or 10 classes came up to the farm in some capacity, which given the size of Amherst College, it's a pretty small college. Like it's, and also considering the amount of classes that have any kind of like relevance towards like farming or agriculture in the first place, like that's a pretty sizable amount.
I take it you have family back in New Jersey.
I do,
How
yes.
do they,
Well, sort
or
of.
how do they feel about your, what do they think about your camper van living and
Yeah.
farming?
I think my parents are a little trepidatious over it. I think they would have preferred if I went into some more like traditional or lucrative like lifestyle. But I think I'm convincing them slowly but surely, just by virtue of like how like successful I've been so far in this venture, that like, you know, this is something that I can comfortably do and they don't have to worry about me. I think that's the bottom line. It's just like, you know, I'm proving to them that this is something that I you know, can do in the first place. And can do while also being happy and healthy. I think they're realizing that, and they're giving me a little bit more lenience.
Did you graduate from Amherst College?
I did, yes, in May.
Do you have student debt?
My parents are taking care of that, so I'm very grateful for
So
that.
you're financially, you're like free right now. You're not in debt.
No.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And are they expecting anything back?
That's the question. They haven't explicitly said that, but there's sort of an underlying expectation that that I do, and you know, it's a cause of some stress on my part.
How do you, can you say any more how you feel about that?
Definitely not the best. Yeah, it's a tricky situation to navigate, and it's yeah, I probably don't want to go into specifics.
It's kind of
Yeah.
personal, but.
I actually I as part of my employee benefits at the college, I have a pretty nice $20 copay on therapy that I'm beginning to use this week.
Uh-huh.
And that'll be one of the topics for
uh-huh.
sure.
Yeah. Do you mind me asking what you got a degree in?
Environmental studies and religion.
Sounds pretty relevant to farming and living in a camper van to me. I mean, just living, right? Living.
Exactly.
And religion. Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Why religion?
It's sort of, I had like a burgeoning interest in just general spirituality that then became a lifelong interest in Buddhism like a couple of years ago. And then I took one class at college. It was called Cool Buddhist Texts.
Uh-huh.
And it was very cool, to tell you the truth.
Uh-huh.
And it just kind of convinced me to also major in religion.
Yeah.
Plus, it's like a really good department at the college. I was having a lot of fun with it. But environmental studies is definitely, like, that was my fun major. And then environmental studies is sort of the career major, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. That's cool. Anything else you want to share?
Franklin, I'm a big fan of these two ducks.
Yeah, Franklin and Pearl. Out. They've been super talkative.
I guess I'll share that. I'll share my love and appreciation for the ducks.
Well, thanks, Dylan.
Of course. Thanks, Ruthie.
That was an interview with Dylan, who was working on his van, making it into a camper van at the Flo-op this past week. Over the weekend, Dylan recently graduated from Amherst College and works at Book and Plow Farm in Amherst. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. The next clip we have is with Dora Staub. But before that, we'll have some Carlos Vives. Gonna celebrate Colombia a little bit. And also, because my friend Miguel, who is a friend from Colombia, big biker friend from Colombia, who was on Out There 5 years ago, is coming to revisit Massachusetts. So, and also Colombia football, they're doing very well in the Copa America or whatever it is, the America's Cup. Yeah, Carlos Vives. Mil canciones.
En un cofre de papel, amores que no vuelven otra vez. Cuántas sensaciones se grabaron en mi sien. Traigo una canción a flor de piel. Dicen que es la sierra que me alegra el despertar. Dicen que es la brisa que viene del mar. Que es un sentimiento que no se puede explicar. Y en cualquier momento. Me hacía libre. No había otro camino que entregar el corazón, porque había nacido hijo de tigre. Dicen que es la sierra que me alegra al despertar. Dicen que es la brisa que viene del mar. Que es un sentimiento que no se puede explicar. Y en cualquier momento me pongo a cantar. Oh, my God.
That's Carlos Vives de Colombia. Some of the words in English are an English translation. I sing for the life that gives me another dawn. I sing for the people who have been forgotten. I sing for the children who fill me with hope for our planet that hurts in its soul. They say it's the mountains that brighten your awakening. They say it's the breeze that comes from the sea. It's a feeling that can't be explained, that any moment that I start to sing. I sing for the life that gives me another dawn. I sing for the people who go to the field. I sing for the team that fills me with hope for the jersey I wear in my soul. There it is, waiting to meet again, that hug that now manages to achieve. I sing for the life that gives me another dawn. There it is, waiting to meet again, that hug. Carlos Vives, thanks for listening to Out There Today. Next on Out There, we have Dorstab. Oh, nope, it's nope. Thursday. That was... Oh, yeah, here we go. That was a missed edit right there. Dora, coming up, Dora. Dora.
11th.
It's Thursday, July 11th, 2024. I'm on the back stoop of 8 High Street here at the Flow Op with... What's your name?
Dora Staub.
And Dora just... came here to stay for a while yesterday. Where did you come from?
Immediately from my parents' house in Springfield, but I came from the Appalachian Trail, which I have been hiking for the last 3 months.
Wow, where did you start?
It starts in Georgia at Springer Mountain, and I hiked 1,400 miles of it up to New York.
Just by yourself?
By myself, I set out by myself, but throughout different parts of it, I hiked with different people that I met on trail, groups of people, and for even 10 days of it, my mom came down and hiked with me. Cool. In Virginia.
So you're carrying your tent and food and all your stuff for 3 months on your back?
That's right, yeah. My pack weighed about 20 pounds.
Pretty light, yeah.
Yeah,
but it feels heavy at the end of it.
Oh, believe me, yeah. Feels heavy. Yeah, you carry tent, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, food for usually 3 to 5 days, water, a change of clothes maybe, but very, very minimal yeah. type of lifestyle. So,
actually, when I think about 20 pounds, when I think about picking up pedal people, customer bags of trash, I actually weighed some today because it felt extra heavy full of cat litter. And I was like, ugh, this little bag, it weighs 20 pounds. So I would not want to carry that bag on my pack, that bag on my back for 3 months. No, I would definitely not. How much water would you carry on you? And where do you get water on the trail?
So in most places, the Appalachian Trail has lots of water sources, like mountain springs and streams. It's actually great water, really beautiful, really tastes really good. So we have all hikers carry like water filters, and then we just grab water out of the streams and filter it and then drink it. So usually at one time I'd only carry like half a liter, because they were so frequent. Every couple of hours I could stop and refill and drink more. Yeah. In the summer months though, as I was going through Pennsylvania and New Jersey, I would often carry 2 liters with me at a time because it was much farther between water sources.
Uh-huh. When you say half a liter, I was about going to ask you to translate that for Americans. But when you said 2 liters, everybody knows what a 2-liter bottle of pop is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the standard thru-hiker water bottle is the 1-liter smart water bottle that you see in like all the grocery stores or whatever, because they're lightweight and they fit the filters that we use. So we measure it by liters because we know that that's 1 liter. So half of that would be half a liter.
Yeah. Cool. So how did you get in shape for this?
I've led a very active life basically my whole life. I grew up biking everywhere. My family didn't own a car, so we do long bike rides and short bike rides, but every day I was biking. And as a teenager, I got more into running and walking, and that would also be my form of transportation. So I just run and walk everywhere. So I came in with a really strong base. I had to get used to the particulars of hiking. So I was sore the first couple of days, but that background really gave me, I think, an advantage.
So your family, you grew up in Springfield and your family didn't have a car?
That's right.
How many in your family?
We're five, my two parents, and then I have two younger brothers.
So when you were on the Appalachian Trail, like, what was the mental, emotional experience like for you?
It's interesting. A lot of people talk about going on the trail because it's a transition period in their life, and they want to learn more about themselves or have some sort of emotional transformation or, and I never really felt, it didn't really take that form for me exactly. I think most of the time I was just thinking, and this is the way my mind works, I was just thinking about practical things. Where's my next water source? When am I gonna resupply? Mm-hmm. How many miles am I doing today? Mm-hmm. So that was more my experience. I think it was at times there were times when I felt, I think, a little I was in between groups of people I was hiking with, and the loneliness really got to me. It's hard to be on the trail, just hiking alone for long stretches of time. And I think that's something that I didn't really realize it was loneliness until someone else told me, until my dad was well, you're not with people, that's why you're feeling down, you know? So I think that was an interesting thing for me to experience. And it was really, it struck me how strange and how different that would, it would be, just imagining people who really do spend their entire lives alone or long stretches of time alone.
Had you ever felt like that before?
Not in that sense, I don't think. Not in that sense. I've always lived in places where I've been living in a community or with a family, or have definitely other people in my daily life all the time. So that was a different kind of experience, to wake up and be just alone in the woods and then hike all day. And I was never I don't think a day went by where I saw nobody, but it was just very, most of the day it was just quiet and my own thoughts, you know, and I had to figure out ways to just entertain myself and motivate myself to keep going. So
did the loneliness ever make you feel like you wanted to quit?
No. I identify as an introvert, so I think it might have been easier for me than it would have been for some people, which is, I think, maybe why it surprised me that it did affect me, you know?
Yeah.
But no, the loneliness never made me want to quit, and I always knew that if I really wanted to or needed to, I could find another group to hike with. Sometimes I was just selfishly interested in doing the amount of miles I wanted to do and not staying with another group. So it was completely my fault, basically.
So trail names are a thing on the AT. Did you get a trail name?
At the very end, I started introducing myself as Pages, because one of my hiking buddies suggested that as a trail name, because I would carry a book with me at all times. Which was somewhat rare, given that a book equals extra weight. But I only did that because at that point it was weird not to have a trail name, and I always felt like I had to explain not having a trail name up until then. I think if I were to do it again, I would not use a trail name at all, because I don't know why exactly. I just don't. They're popular on the AT among through hikers, and I think they can be cute on some people, but I don't really get it for myself. I don't really like it. I want to be Dora, and I'm fine being Dora. I don't feel a need to assume a new identity or whatever on the trail. Yeah. So,
with a name like Dora, who would need another one?
Well, that was part of the problem, that everyone, when I introduced myself by my real name, everyone thought that was my trail name already. So they'd be like, oh, wait, how'd you get that one? You know.
That's funny. So did you have a cell phone with you?
I did, yeah.
Did you ever use it for entertainment?
Not often. I would try to... I would try to use it sparingly because I had obviously limited power. Like, I had only a certain amount of charge on my phone, yeah, and it would have to last for several days. Uh-huh. So I would use it just to be in contact with my family once in a while when I had service, or look up, like, when if I was going to town, look up what hostels might be available or, like, different resources that I would need. But, and a lot of time in on the AT, you don't even have service, so that's not an option to use it for, you know, entertainment or whatever.
People use them for games or something.
Yeah, I think something, but I don't think that's a big thing, actually. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's actually really nice, like, yeah, people are hiking all day, and then when they get to camp, you build a campfire, and you sit around the fire, and you talk to other campers, and you cook your dinner, and so it's definitely not a pervasive thing.
Yeah. I spent a night on the AT last April or June, I think it was June, last year, and the place where my friend and I stayed, there was a couple other hikers staying there. And one of them had, in the middle of the woods, had his cell phone playing, like, wave sounds to put him to sleep all night long.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it would definitely, I think, have been a different experience, you know, 20 years ago when nobody was hiking with cell phones.
Yeah.
But... Mm-hmm. That said, I think a lot of hikers realize that they're trying to live a different kind of life while they're on the trail, and so I think there's some consciousness around putting that aside.
Yeah. But. So you said you had done some long bike rides before in life. Like, how long?
Well, my personal record.
Yeah, that's what we're going for.
I did 148 miles in one day from Springfield, Massachusetts to Falmouth, Massachusetts on Cape Cod, where my grandparents live. I did it with my dad, and it took us about 15 hours in all. It was crazy. We
on a mountain bike.
But
that bike you showed me.
On that bike. Yeah, I don't know. Is that a mountain bike?
Yeah.
So it was fun though. It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
So the math doesn't add up to me, but when I think about how long it takes me to bike anywhere, but so that's like 10 miles an hour. Did you stop at all? Did you stop to eat or something?
Yeah, I think we probably averaged, when we were biking, we probably averaged like 12 miles an hour. And then we took a couple of, like, maybe 45-minute breaks.
So that's like biking for 5 hours, a 45-minute break, biking for 5 hours.
Smokes. Yeah.
I guess that's how you get places. How old were you?
That was last summer, so I was 20. Yeah.
Okay.
I also did it when I was, when I was 14, I did a 70-mile ride, and then... When I was, like, 18, I did 2 70-mile rides in a row. So we did the same distance, but just, one overnight in between. So, yeah. I kind of built up to it over the years.
Yeah. How do you feel about biking now?
That's a loaded question, because you know the answer to that. To be honest, I really actually do like long bike rides. Like the kind that I did with my dad to the Cape. Every day, though, I would I much prefer walking and running over biking to get for transportation and also just for my own enjoyment. I think I grew up biking so much that I just wore it out probably. and I like, yeah. And I also really just don't, I don't like fixing my bike. And so, and so I figured the less I use it, the less I have to fix it. that's not to say I'm very committed to a carless lifestyle though. Mm-hmm. So I do walk a lot of places. I do run some places and I use public transit too. So
for you, what's within walking or running distance, like to run an errand or go to a friend's house or something?
I've done up to like 6 miles of walking before to get somewhere. I don't do that often. I would say probably more regularly, I'll do like 3 miles yes. one way.
Yeah.
If it's over that, I would probably bike just yeah. in the interest of time.
yeah. Yeah. But 3 miles is nice. That's like from yeah. here to downtown yeah. Northampton. Yeah. Especially if you can do it on the path.
Right. Yeah.
cool. Why are you committed to a carless lifestyle?
Oh my goodness. So many reasons. First of all, it's awesome. It's just so much fun. I mean, who wants to sit in a car all day when you could be out walking or biking, right? Also, the way I was raised, my parents really put an emphasis on, like, building local community and trying to stay in that community and the belief that cars kind of, like, bring us away from the place where we live, and thus we end up spending lots of time in transport, and don't really have like our local community right around us. And so the idea was that by using bikes or walking or public transit, you kind of like build a life that's right around you and that's within a reasonable distance. And that way, you're not so, like, stretched out. Yeah, so.
So, being from Springfield, how does it feel to be in living in Northampton right now?
Oh, my goodness.
It's 20 miles away, or I guess Florence. It's, like, 20, 25 miles away.
Yeah. Growing up in Springfield, I have to be honest, there was always a little bit of... I don't know. We kind of had a little bit of beef with Northampton, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah. So not that I really have anything against Northampton. I think you guys are great. but I liked that we were like a biking family that wasn't from Northampton. Because all the other bikers we knew were like, you know, of course you go to Northampton, you see lots of people biking, mm-hmm. you know. So it was kind of like, I was like, yeah, we're the cool ones. Because where you live, it's cool to be bikers. Where we mm-hmm. live, it's not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But being here, it feels nice. I mean, it's like close enough to home, but not too close. So. It's really nice to be here at the Flow Up. they've been very generous and welcoming to me, so and have some really cool things going on, so come check it out.
That was an interview with Dora Staub. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie. Thanks for listening today. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. There will not be Bike Lab tomorrow, I don't think. Tomorrow is the alternating bi-weekly when I'm not regularly doing Bike Lab. But there will be Bike Lab next Saturday. That would be July 20th. Any other announcements? Oh, I went to the Thursday free concert in Florence at the Civic Center lawn last night. That was nice. Jose Gonzalez was playing salsa, Latin jazz, or something like that. And the free concerts happen every Thursday from 6:30 to 8 in front of the Florence Civic Center. Wednesdays in Florence, you can go to the Florence Farmers Market. And tomorrow, you can go to the Northampton Saturday Farmers Market. And tonight at 6 o'clock in Haydenville, Ultimate Frisbee. I'm going to try and play. Try and shuffle or something, because my housemate Ursa, says she wants to play. And we're going to bike out there together, maybe with a friend of hers. All right, you're listening to Out There, and that's it for Out There. Say thanks for listening to Valley Free Radio. Yeah. All right, so